It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying. There is no running, there is no hiding. There's only fighting or dying. It's going down, and you're invited for what they selling. We ain't buying. There is no running, there is no hiding. There's only fighting or dying.
It's Going Down is a digital community center from anarchist, anti-fascist, autonomous, anti-capitalist, and anti-colonial movements. Our mission is to provide an autonomous and resilient platform to publicize and promote revolutionary theory and action.
Go to itsgoingdown.org for daily updates. Check out our online store for ways to donate and rate and follow us on iTunes if you like this podcast.
Yo, what up? It's Soul, Tim Holland, representing.
Soul performs the songs that appear at the start of This Is America and It's Going Down podcast. Great to have him on. Also, one of the people that's behind the Channel Zero Network. We're going to be talking about a new album we have coming out, and also there's going to be a new season of the Soulcast that's starting right now, I believe.
Yep, season two.
Awesome. So we're going to be kind of digging into that and kind of picking your brain about a lot of different stuff. But for those unfamiliar with your work, just kind of give us an overview of your career so far.
I mean, really, I started rapping when I was like a little kid, like when I was like 11 or 12, just like borrowed a mixer from my art teacher in eighth grade and was looping tapes and making beats and rapping on it. And then, you know, it just kept going from there. And so at a really early age, I, you know, got a job at McDonald's and saved up money to put out a record on vinyl in like 1994 when I was, you know, like 16 or something. And then, like, you know, because not a lot of people were doing it, I just kind of managed to build up a following through like tape trades on the internet, on like before the internet, on like news groups and things like Prodigy and stuff. And then, yeah, and then I don't know, around the mid to late 90s, I started coming across all these like really experimental, kind of what I would call now outsider artists, you know, who were also listening to like a lot of the more independent, experimental hip hop stuff, like Project Blood or, you know, New York underground music or, just, you know, just like people all over the North America who were just making weird shit. And then a bunch of us moved to the Bay Area in like 1998 and we're like, hey, let's start this thing called Anticon. And originally I was like, you know, gonna have like, I wanted to be like a Master P figure or something. And then decided to make it a collective. And it was I think the first collectively run record label in North America. Maybe not, at least for hip hop, it was possibly. And then I just been doing it ever since. You know, I lived in Barcelona for a little while, lived in Arizona, lived in California, lived in Colorado. We move around a lot. And, I don't know. I just never really gave a fuck about, like, trying to be the next big thing or anything. I just did what I felt. And for better or for worse, I'm still doing it. And I think it's a testament to stubbornness.
Where are the other people from Anticon now? Are they still doing music too, or are you one of the only ones?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they're all still doing music now. I mean, everybody's kind of scattered to the wind. The label doesn't exist anymore. Like Alias, one of the other founders, died tragically, like a year and a half ago. And that's, you know, really fucked up, and like, he had kids and shit, and it's crazy. Just crazy, you know, that we're like, you know, when we were like, you know, rapping and sleeping on floors and 11 people in an Oakland Lake Merritt, basement, like, I never thought, like, oh shit, we'll be going to each other's funerals, you know? But, you know, people are also doing things, but I'd say we've all kind of gone in separate directions. It was a kind of youthful project, and I don't think there was a lot of shared vision as far as, like, you know, what the what the thing actually would be. And so I think that led to like fracturing and splintering. And, you know, although I was the founder, I was also the first person to pull my masters because I didn't like the way the record label was going. And, so
how is that exactly?
Because it was supposed to be a cooperatively run collective label. But because I knew how the business worked and because I was like, you know, on the contracts and I knew the way shit was supposed to go. I knew that the person who had been running the label wasn't really working in the best interests of the artists on the label. And, I kept trying to replace him and get people to move against him. And, no one wanted to do that. And at a certain point, I was just like, you know what? This is like a psychic drain. It's making me bitter and depressed. So I just, at that point, I had nothing to lose. The label wasn't making me any money. And here I, like, you know, poured my life. I considered it my life work. And, so I just took all my shit. And, then all of a sudden I was middle class.
Then you started your own label after that, or?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of always had like my own shit on the side for side projects. And then around 2009, I just started like, it was never really all about like running a record label by myself. It was more just about being a DIY artist and owning my masters. There was a period where I tried releasing other people's music, but I didn't enjoy that.
And when did Bottle of Humans come out?
Bottle of Humans.
Is that the wrong title?
No, yeah. It's just funny to hear you say that. I don't know. I mean, it came out in like 2000, but it wasn't even like a real record. It was just like a tour CD of like collected songs that just kept changing. That just press them up on CDRs and then just, there were like, there's like four different versions of that record out.
But it's fair to say that that's kind of like your underground smash, so to speak.
Yeah, I think that one and Selling Live Water, the one that came after it, were like the two that, really put me on the map and, like changed everything for me.
Yeah, because your sound and your style has just like evolved so much from then. Like I think people that like listen to you now, if they would go back and listen to that stuff, would be like, "What is this?"
Oh, totally. I mean, yeah, but also like that shit's kind of coming back now too. Like the sort of lo-fi poet, you know, shit is kind of coming back now. So I think, like, people going back to listen to that stuff, it wouldn't sound totally foreign to them. They'd just be like, oh, shit, like, where are the trap beats?
Are people rediscovering your stuff then, or?
I don't know. I think so. Yeah. I don't know.
Let's turn now and talk about the Channel Zero Anarchist Podcast Network. How did that get off the ground? There's recently been a fundraiser that's going to ensure that it's going to be around for a little bit longer, but talk about how it got started.
I think it really started when Bursts from Final Straw emailed me before we'd ever met, emailed me just like to be friendly, just to introduce himself and just say, hey, I'm Bursts from the Final Straw. And I was like, oh, you know, because my experience with like a lot of people who've been around longer in anarchy world tend to be like more standoffish and not so friendly. And I was like, whoa, this person seems really cool. And so we started having little correspondences here and there. And then I came in contact with Witch Side Podcast, who was like, you know, because at that time it was just, as far as I know, Crime Think, X Worker, Witch Side, the Soul Cast, and It's Going Down was just starting. And so it was like, you know, I met y'all and I met like the Crime Think people and I've been like, you know, friends with Submedia for a while and most of how I experienced Submedia's stuff was through audio. And I don't know, I was just like a nerd. I always like, you know, I'm like a white noise kind of person, and so I would always throw on C-SPAN radio and just listen to it. And I was like, how cool would it be if there was just like a random player randomly streaming anarchist media all the time? I think that would be cool. And then so I just, you know, pitched the idea to that group of people, and then everybody was like, yeah, fuck it, let's do it. And then and then we did it. And then you know, and like through the use of how the project was like used by people, like the whole player thing didn't really people didn't really use it. They wanted to go on the website and just see what looked interesting to them and listen to it, because that's how people listen to podcasts. And so the projects evolved over the years, and, you know, and really, I mean, I feel like I really want to give Bursts a lot of props, because, you know, in the last couple of years, I've been like moving and having kids and just, I haven't had a lot of time. And so Bursts has really stepped up and like really made an effort to like bring people in and reach out to lots of other projects. And so now, if you look at Channel Zero, like internally, there's all these awesome projects, and I feel like we've really started to build a culture of like solidarity and mutual aid. And I'm excited to see how we re-envision where the project goes this year. It's a really cool thing to be involved with. And it's an honor that you use my music, and it's really, you know, feels like an honor to be a part of something like this, because I remember when I was like getting radicalized, the best shit I had to listen to was like a Howard Zinn CD or a Noam Chomsky CD. Like, there wasn't YouTube. This kind of shit didn't really exist. And so people coming up today have like this abundance of deep, you know, philosophical threads that they can pull on to learn about organizing and history, and there's so many people doing so much awesome work, and it's just it's fucking cool to be part of that ecosystem.
We put out a poll for people's favorite music and also to suggest new artists, and we had over 1,000 people vote on the poll, and also just a flood of people sharing different artists from punk to metal to hip-hop to ska to reggae, all different stuff. So it's going to be exciting to kind of dig through that and see what other people are listening to. But yeah, it's great to have you on the podcast, even just music wise, and people really enjoy it. Well, I wanted to ask you specifically about podcasts. I mean, as somebody that's been, you know, making music for so long, I mean, we're going to be talking about how the music industry has changed a little bit. I'm excited to ask you about that, but I'm just kind of curious to get your thoughts on kind of the rise of the podcast, like as this medium. You know, people are listening to so much different stuff now. I mean, ASMR is big. You've got podcasts, of course. People are streaming everything. I mean, there's obviously like a, you know, we could go off into a whole situationist derive on this thing, but, you know, I'm just curious your thoughts on podcasting becoming so popular and also so many anarchist podcasts starting.
Well, I mean, you know, the derive isn't a bad place to start, you know, because we just, it's what people are doing now. They're walking around listening to podcasts, you know, and that's about it, as far as I'll take that. But I think like there's a couple things going on. One, I think people are curious about radical politics, and again, when I think about when I was coming up, I used to think like, oh, to be an activist, you had to be part of an NGO, you had to go to college, you had to read all these books and shit. And it's like, I just didn't like realize like a lot of the people showing up were just people who were fucking ready to throw down. And, you know, you don't need a master's degree, but that's like the kind of stupid shit I used to think before, you know, when I was younger or whatever. And so it's like with podcasting, I feel like it really demystifies all of this stuff. It demystifies anarchism. It demystifies activism. It demystifies organizing. You know, you have projects like Rebel Steps who are like intentionally trying to create new organizers. You know, you have, you know, just all these different projects have a different bent to them. And I think we're seeing the rise in them, you know, for a number of reasons. And some of this I'm borrowing from what I've heard Brett from Revolutionary Left say, and I agree, that like, you know, we're in this hyper alienated, atomized period where people are, you know, in their cars, they're on their bikes, they're in their subways, they're spending a lot of time alone in their headphones going to and from work, school, or whatever, or exercising, whatever they're doing. And back, you know, maybe 10 years ago, you might have to listen to NPR, you know, or maybe like Democracy Now if you were lucky. but as we see the way that like events are unfolding and all the stuff that's happening in the world, like most people know that like NPR and even Democracy Now and like a lot of these other things are only showing like they're not showing the whole picture. And people want to dig deeper, and they want to get to the root of things. And that's what radical politics, that's what the word radical means, is getting to the root. And we want to get to the root. We want to figure out why the world is so fucked up and how we can change it. And so people are seeking to educate themselves, because this sort of education, it's not necessarily available in colleges, or if it is, it's really expensive and you go to debt. And so it's a way for people to, you know, get educated, or to hear about what's going on in other places, or to learn about history, or, and, you know, and it's not just, you know, radical politics, like, you know, trying to think of, like, you know, a lot of people like true crime podcasts, or, you know, I'm doing a podcast about perennial vegetables. That doesn't, you know, we're not burning cop cars with perennial vegetables, but it's still, you know, it's fun to do those things and talk about it. So yeah, I just think it's like, we're in this period where there's more options and people want to dig deeper. And so the podcast is a great platform for that. And because most people still have not even heard podcasts, there's still this, you know, wide potential for more and more people to be exposed to these ideas.
So I wanted to talk now about, you know, the music industry. I think there's been so many changes, and I think a lot of this, you know, can really relate back to, you know, larger things that are happening within capitalism. But, you know, just real briefly, or as long as you want, what was the music, how would you say the music industry is like now compared to when you were involved in Anticom? Like, what are the big differences?
Well, I mean, it's not even the same thing anymore. Like, nothing is the same. You know, like, I don't know, Ray Kurzweil has his, like, you know, the exponential growth of digital technology multiplying itself constantly. And, like, you know, we totally see that with music. Like, when I started, I was using a dial-up modem. Nobody was online. I was called a geek for using the internet to promote my music. Like, people would talk shit, you know. and, you know, back then, like, for instance, my first 12-inch, you know, it sold 2,000 copies. I didn't, you know, I was like 16 years old. I didn't do anything to promote it. I just, back then, the way it worked was you press up a record, it goes out through a distributor, the distributor sends it to record stores, and the record stores were the point of discovery, where you'd walk into a record store, the person working at the record store is like, oh, you like Pinback? Then you should check out Silver Jews, or, you know, whatever. Or you like Latyrix? Check out Live Poets, which was my old band. And you know, and, like, you know, and also you could get in magazines like Herb, put us in the Next 100. And that, like, because Herb put us in their Next 100, it was like, bam, we're on the map now. People pay attention to us. And, like, these institutions that existed were there to sell ads or whatever, but also, like, a big part of that was, like, breaking new artists, and, like, there were points of discovery. And over the years, you know, we saw, like, the folding of Tower Records, the folding of, like, large independent distributors, record stores closing, and, like, this general shift away from, like, traditional distribution, magazines, college radio as a point of discovery. And now that's all been replaced essentially with Spotify. And in the intermediary, you had, like, the blogosphere, and then social media killed off the blogosphere, and, like, social media was still a place where there was a sort of semi-level playing field where artists, labels, and fans could, like, communicate with each other. And then after a while, once they figured out how to monetize everything, artists and labels became cut off from their fan bases and their supporters, to the point where now you can't even run ads on Facebook, barely. You can't really run ads on Instagram. An algorithm is determining everything that people see on these platforms that we built up ourselves. And now you look at Spotify, and what it shows is just this, like, A, Silicon Valley is in control. It's not even like traditional record companies anymore. So, like, the artists are getting fucked. The independent labels are getting fucked. I mean, it's the artists who always get fucked the hardest. And so with Spotify and these streaming companies, now the major players are tech companies. And they don't give a shit about me. They don't give a shit about revolutionary music or experimental music. They're just there to sell things and try to monetize things. And, you know, I actually have a big podcast episode, like, exploring all the impacts of this. And I don't consider myself to be an expert on it. I just look at, like, how income streams have changed and how much harder it is now for people to earn money from music. Like, I have so many homies who like are much more famous than me, who are just dropping off like flies and just being like, I can't do this anymore. I'm like, dude, you sell out the really? Bluebird. You sell out the Bluebird, you know? But because I've had like such like a DIY model all along, and I, you know, I keep my eyes on where things are going. I've tried to stay ahead of everything because I don't want to have to get a job.
Can you name drop somebody that's pretty big that we might know? That's
you know, no, I don't really want to. I don't really sure. want to do that. But
well,
just because I hope they don't. I hope they don't. But just hearing that fear, like I'm scared. A bunch of people are afraid of what the future holds. And so, you know, it's good that people are openly discussing these things because, you know, within the problem lies a solution. We just gotta,
right.
You know, just gotta think and have these, and not be afraid to have these conversations.
Brought up things like YouTube and Spotify. I recently watched, I don't know if you've seen that, kind of like they do short bits, but it's like Adam Ruins Everything. But they did one on the music industry, and basically what they said is that, you know, when file sharing became a big thing and people began to basically get their music online, there was a crash, obviously, in CD shares. And the way that basically big companies that owned the masters or whatever, the, you know, the big corporations that, you know, owned the band's music and stuff, the way they basically recoiled from that is then they began to switch to, you know, streaming services like Spotify or, you know, I guess YouTube or something like that. And basically they were able to recover after a couple years from the hit that they took from, you know, the downward spiral when file sharing began. But the catch of that was, is that essentially there was an austerity model in which, you know, the artists themselves made a lot less money. And in the video, the Adam Ruins Everything, they said the way that a lot of people got around that is they do now, like, you know, sponsorships or ads with corporations. So if, you know, you're an artist and you have an Instagram, then you'll do something with Nike or something like that to get extra money. But none
of it. Oh, shit. Really. No one's told me about that. Where do I sign up? Shit.
So I don't know. I'm just curious. I mean, we already kind of got into it, but if you have any other thoughts about basically that kind of monetization with like everything existing on the internet now, how, you know. And also, I guess the other question is, like, so what does that mean for, like, a DIY band? Because, I mean, like, before there was almost sort of an argument that, like, you could almost do better if you were, like, a well-known, you know, group that has been around for a while. Like, you have a fan base. Like, it makes more sense, maybe. Like, if you're not going to be selling millions of records, if you're just going to be kind of, like, doing marginally well, to basically stay on an independent label and just sell your own stuff.
Well, yeah, I mean, the truth is, though, like, to me, I never really saw a lot of benefit in working with independent labels because they really couldn't do a lot for me that I couldn't do for myself, especially in this modern environment. Like, just being on a label, unless the label's actually doing something for you, like getting signed to Anacon back in the day would mean like you could go tour Europe, you could have a booking agent, like it would change your life. You know, you could have a career after that. And I still have a career as a result of that. I guess the things I want to say is like, you know, and in that time period when we were coming up, like Napster, you know, people used to complain about it, and maybe even we did too, but like, man, that exposed our shit to so many people. And that's why, that's like what the record labels saw was like, oh shit, like people are really wanting other stuff, and like, this isn't benefiting us, because no one's going to buy a fucking Britney Spears album if they can just download that shit. Whereas like, people were connecting with all this underground music on Napster, and it was really like, it, like, I don't know, I don't know what role Napster played in my career. I think it was probably very big, one of the bigger factors, in addition to things I named. And so I think nowadays, you know, for me, like, I can't, like, and this is the thing about Spotify, is like, I do get money from streaming, like, because I own my masters, I do, you know, make a couple $100 a month from streaming. Like, it's not, it's certainly pennies to trade out for like what I would get on a new release back in the day, but it's like more than I'd get from SoundCloud or YouTube. So like we don't get to like put that genie back in the bottle. You know, it's there, it exists. And I'm like trying to figure out how, like, what my engagement with it is. And it's still like an open question because I haven't put my podcast on there. I feel like I should. But you know, for independent artists now, it's like Bandcamp is where it's at, you know, and like, and what I don't make from record sales anymore, I make it up with Bandcamp or, Kickstarter or even, you know, Patreon. But it's like, it's crazy to have to like, you know, as an artist to like basically adopt an NPR model to survive. It's fucking crazy. And like, you know, I guess I'm good at self-promo, so I don't care so much, but it's not how I want to spend the rest of my life, I'll tell you that.
So what are your thoughts about touring now?
We've been talking
basically about how it's kind of harder. Like, are you still interested in touring? Like, we're going to talk about the new album in a second, but like, are you going to go out and tour for it, or?
I mean, truth is, you know, we just had kids. You know, it's mostly a personal decision. Like, we have a little farm. We're trying to, you know, I'm really trying to just go all in on that because I don't know how long music is going to last. I don't know how much longer I really want to spend fighting algorithms. I'm always going to make music. It's always going to be a huge part of my life. But, you know, when I'm 50 years old, I don't want to have to be making Kickstarter videos to fucking survive. So that's like, you know, that's where I'm at with, we just had kids, and so I'm just like, I want to be really present and in their lives. And so I'm not touring at all, at least for the foreseeable future. I imagine, you know, when they're like in school and when things change a little bit, I will, but it's really important to me to be present. That said, I mean, if it wasn't for touring, like, we wouldn't have met. I wouldn't have learned all the things that I've learned in my life. I wouldn't be as radical. I never would have like visited squats. I never would have gone to Athens or, you know, communes in Europe. You know, I never would have like a lot of the people who are part of my podcast and like, you know, like a lot of, like, I have a lot of trust in like the radical world because like, you know, I've gotten fucked up with a lot of activists around the country and just talked shit and, you know, and so like nothing, like, that's invaluable, you know, getting like that to me is the best part of touring. And so it's like, I don't want to not tour anymore, but just for right now, while I'm like trying to be an eco dad, I'm just make it.
Go down.
Just making music and podcasts and trying to just have fun with it, man. Because all this like Spotify shit, it is kind of like, you know, it's it sucks. And like, to me, the only thing to do is just to like kind of let go and just have fun. Cause it's like, otherwise, like what's the fucking point?
Well, it's an austerity model. It makes all of us work. I mean, anybody that's like basically doing stuff like this online and basically crowdfunding an existence, you know, as much as we can say, like, how grateful it is that people like support what we're doing, and it seems to be growing at the same time. I mean, like, you know, you're working your butt off literally for below minimum wage when you really come down to it, all the work that you put into it. So it's, I mean, that's the reality. But, you know,
well, I don't need, hey, I grow my own food. I don't need that much money.
Well, there you go. You know, one of the things that I think is always, and I want to put out there, we do have an interview from like 2015 that people can read, but I think we touched on this in that interview. But, you know, one of the things I always think is really interesting is that you have this really long career and you have all these like really underground fans that really like appreciate the work that you put in. And it seems like you have a new generation of fans that kind of know you from your work following, I think, I'm Emma Goldman on, maybe, like, and kind of like the DJ Payne era. And I'm just curious, you know, what's that mix like? And is that's still been kind of the mix of fans that you have now?
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to know like where listeners are coming from. You know, I think like, you know, if I were to point, I could point to like a number of things. I could point to like my podcast is actually a point of discovery for people getting into my music through my podcast, which surprises me. You know, going on tour with Pat the Bunny, you know, working with Submedia, like those are like the three, that and like also through my work with Fake Four Records, which is run by my homie Chesky. Like those four things I think have been like the things that have brought me new supporters, and also just like the media stuff I was doing after Occupy, like rap as journalism and like, you know, mixtapes and rapping over a Kanye beat or whatever, like you know, and it's cool. I mean, I'm honestly like lately, as I was like trying to like rethink a lot of things, I you know, when I had we just had a second baby, and it like makes you all crazy, and so it just like, it's a good point to like rethink everything in my life. So I just started like really asking for feedback, and I was like really surprised with the feedback I got. Like, you know, people who've been riding with me since the very beginning, who are now like living on farms, or like, you know, anarchist organizers, or, you know, like it blows me away that people would just be growing alongside me, like going from Zin to Guy Debord to, you know, Crime Think to Invisible Committee. And now like we just printed up like 200 copies of Desert with our last album. And now all these people are like loving Desert. And it's just shocking to me. It's like one of the most shocking part of my job is always like what I can get away with. You know, I'm like, can I get away with this? Like, this is crazy. This is awesome. Yeah,
so you don't have like old fans from like, you know, Bottle of Humans days. They're like, what's all this farming crap? Whatever, you know?
No. I mean, if anything, I weeded out a lot of the people with the overt political shit. Cause like it used to be so dense and abstract that once I started like slowing it down and like spelling it out, people were like, why do you hate America so much? I'm like, yo, I'll refund my music. Like, I don't fucking, like, I ain't got time for this. Like, I don't care. I don't give a shit, you know? And like, I think if I had kept doing the same thing, sonically, you know, I don't know. I think like I've definitely like alienated old fans at points, but the people who ride with me, like ride with me. And it's beautiful. I mean, as a DIY person, I can like look on the packages I've been sending out all these years and be like, oh my God, I'm sending another one to this person. Like, oh, that's so crazy. And you know, and like one of the, like, you know, and then like people surprise me, you know, like I had a homie, my friend Chris from Moody Black came out as a trans woman couple years back, and so we just did like a really like 101, you know, trans podcast, and I'd get feedback from people who were like, you know, like, cause you know, a lot of like the older hip hop fans are like, you know, I don't know, not like, some of them are kind of like just bros, you know, I don't know how else to say it, just like rap dudes. And they're like, you know, I learned so much in that podcast because the way she would talk about, like, it wasn't from like a hyper academic activist-y sort of framework. It was like a very deep explanation of like, this is like what I felt when I was five. This is what I felt as I was growing up. And like, so it's crazy to me that, like, you know, doing all this work, that people fuck with it. Cause you know, I do all this weird shit. It's like 1 minute I'll do a permaculture episode. The next one I'll be like interviewing a rapper. Then the next one I'll be like talking to a political prisoner or something. And it's like, and again, I just keep asking myself, like, can I get away with this? It's like, yeah, I guess so.
Well, speaking of new projects, let's talk about the new album, which is continuing to work with DJ Payne One, and also the new season of the Soulcast.
Well, No God Nor Country is the new album from DJ Payne One and I. It's out everywhere. Please buy it on Bandcamp first and then stream it if that's your thing. And yeah, it's just, you know, No God Nor Country. Basically, it's an album, you know, continuing along the lines of like the other stuff we did, maybe a little less making less of an attempt to make pop music, just kind of making like whatever the fuck we wanted to. And I would say like the theme on it is sort of like this embrace of like uncertainty. It's not like some hardcore atheist statement. I just thought it was like a strong, title that kind of sounded like, No Country for Old Men. And it just like, I just had like this vision of like a, I don't know, movie trailer with like a Trump supporter getting mud splashed on his face or something. Yeah. So that project is out. People can check it out. It's cool. We have another record probably dropping at the end of the year of, other songs.
Oh, really?
Yep. It's probably like a mixtape. I mean, this is what I mean. I just don't give a fuck. I'm just like putting a bunch of shit out because I want to and I can. It's like, it's really making music. Like if I cut all the bullshit out of my life, I just make music all the time.
And DJ Payne One is still doing great things too.
Yeah. I mean, he's got this, music entrepreneurs club thing that he's doing where he like mentors young producers. You know, that guy's, you know, incredible. He's always working. Every time I talk to him, he's like, oh yeah, I just got another placement with, you know, whoever, Ludacris or something. I was like, that's so funny. It's so cool. And,
great beats.
Yeah, he's awesome. I'm actually about to drop like an EP of like science fiction raps. It's a really weird record. I don't know what it's called. It's getting mastered right now. It's trying not to be dystopian, but try to like imagine like what various futures could be. And that was just like a fun little writing exercise. I'm not even sure if they're songs.
What's your writing process like? Do you just carry around like a notepad, or do you like sit down and be like, now's my writing time? Or
does it I just play a beat. I just play a beat, go into a trance, drink some coffee, and I write. And that's it.
Really?
I don't walk around with a pen. I don't like, just like, you know, I just like bottle it up and I don't make art all the time. I just like make a beat, listen to it, write to it, get a beat, listen to it, write to it. If I'm not moved, I can't force it. I don't do it. I guess it's like a sort of Kerouacian approach. Like I wouldn't say it's stream of consciousness, but, I just sort of trust my process. I guess it's, I try not to overthink things. I think it like, anytime I do, it just like makes shit boring. And I got another solo album, like the third, it's like the follow up to Destituent. I don't really know what it's called. It's almost done. I'm just, you know, just trying to fucking, you know, just trying to keep the flies off. And season two of the Soulcast has been around, I think, since 2013. So it's kind of tongue in cheek to call it season two. But basically, I just wanted to take it weekly. But I feel like the first, you know, beginning of the project, I was like kind of just really curious and really like figuring things out and wasn't really sure necessarily like what I believed. And it was more just like curious about just, you know, pulling on various threads. Whereas like now I feel like I'm in a different phase of my life. I'm mostly interested in like infrastructure and food autonomy and like not thinking so much about like responding to things, but laying like the groundwork for like fertile grounds for revolutionary action. I feel like a lot of the activism that I've been involved with in my life, or organizing, if I can call it that, like it's just like gestures that dissipate, you know, moments of like frazzled energy, and we're like all riled up about something, and then we call for assemblies, and then people get together, and then like everything just kind of dissipates. And and so I'm just trying to think like, why is that those things always tend to happen? Like, why does everything end in toxicity and drama and infighting? And you know, and I think that's because for the most part, like, I haven't been starting from a person to person, more human level. Like, you know, we're over here looking like, why are people burning cars in Ferguson but not in Denver? Well, because like maybe those people in those neighborhoods, like they knew each other and they trusted each other and they were down to take those kind of risks. Whereas like, we're just a bunch of strangers who met in an assembly and, you know, we don't really know each other. And we're just like throwing down in a more abstract way. And so I'm just trying to like, with the podcast, I'm just trying to explore like, you know, like, what does it really mean to build autonomy? You know, how do we do that? How do we, really build like a revolutionary capacity to sustain ourselves, because I'm at a point where I don't think that necessarily like rushing the Bastilles, you know, every week is producing the results that, that I want it to. And so it's like, okay, sure, let's show up. Let's fight back. Let's do all these things. But like, what are we really doing to prefigure, the world we want to see? How, you know, so it's like simple shit, like learning herbalism, you know, learning how to grow food. Like, I love food. That's how I want to spend my time. And a lot of other people want to spend their time doing that. So like, how can we tie food into revolutionary, strategy, you know? And I don't like have, I don't think I have like all the answers, but these are like the kinds of questions I'm asking in season two. Like, how do we build, you know, how do we build fertile grounds for
sure
capacity that's multi-generational also?
That kind of push, has that been a product of you moving to a more rural area recently, or is that just, you know, kind of like your own trajectory?
I'd say both. I think if I hadn't been having those thoughts, I don't know if I would have moved to a, like, I didn't feel like Denver was fertile grounds. At the time I felt like I'd watched so many people get pushed out. There's like only rich assholes can afford to move here now. Like, I didn't know how I could intervene anymore, but really I wanted to live in the countryside. I wanted to be closer to my family and wanted to raise my kid around deer ticks. It's like, you know, I think my kids are really going to like deer ticks and navigating Lyme disease. Just kidding. So like moving to rural Maine, it's like having kids, being in the countryside, definitely makes me think about this shit different, because I was definitely one of these people who didn't keep, none of my friends had kids. And so it just like makes me see like a whole other aspect of human experience that's largely written out of activist spaces from my experience. And like being in like the hinterland, as I like to think of it as, like, you know, I can't even plug into the kinds of things that I would be used to plugging into in Denver. You know, I can't, there isn't like a, you know what I mean? It's just not the same. But that's also interesting because a lot of the country looks that way. And so what does it mean to be an anarchist? Like, and so I just, when I put out there that I was moving to Maine, I started reaching out to all the anti-authoritarian groups in the area and like people who had heard my podcast reach out to me. And so I just started meeting all these people, and they all, a lot of them happened to be farmers in some capacity. And so that's been like a really interesting way to think about it, because it's like the problems out here. It's like, yes, you have gentrification, but you also have like groceries are crazy expensive here. I mean, when people talk about the cost of living versus cities and places like Maine, it's fucking crazy how expensive groceries are. So like questions about food, you know, questions about all these kinds of things I'm talking about, like they definitely feel more important here, especially because I'm not, you know, there's not a lot of not the kind of radical activity that I'm used to, but it looks different out here. It's you know, there's a lot of radical people spread out across the countryside, and I feel like the country's like that. And so it's a really interesting challenge to be like organizing, talking, and thinking with other people who are in a similar situation. Like, well, what does it mean to build autonomy out here? You know, how do we, you know, and these are open questions. You know, we're just kind of getting started, and, but it's an interesting thing to think about. It's,
For sure. And I think that's a trajectory we're going to continue to see. You know, it does seem, especially like big cities, a lot of people are being pushed out. People are spreading out. And I think that's one of the things we've seen over the past couple of years under Trump, as more people have been activated. A lot of people that are being activated are in places that before had no radical kind of scenes, and that's changing now. It means that people have to kind of reinvent the wheel in a lot of places, but it also means that there's more people in different spots.
Check it out. If you got beef with COPs, throw a Molotov at the PIGs, cause they be harassing you and me. You gotta understand that we still not free. If you got beef with COPs, throw a Molotov at the PIGs, cause they be harassing you and me. Don't trust the police, no justice, no peace. They got me face down in the middle of the street, pistol with me with the heat. Chicken shit sizzling, trying to serve me with the all you can eat. Murder beef, I'm a young black heterosexual male. Don't drink, drink, don't smoke, don't sell. That's the real reason why they want me up in jail. They want me to fail, I resist and rebel. See, I give a fuck about the COP, PIGs. I wanna lock and shake them like a PIT, cause they wanna see me DIE. Tommy Cash under my mind, I'm a pre-OG. Dark Soviet socialist, bitches, venomous, vocalist, pro-po-po, total, holding it down for open. Flows through, at least smoking, and the shit we doing, we hoping. So just a notice to get the notice to throw a Molotov music. You got me, you see your bitch. Throw a Molotov at the PIGs, cause they be the best, you and me. You gotta understand that we still not free. If you got me, you see your bitch. Throw a Molotov at the PIGs, cause they be the best, you and me. You gotta understand that we still not free.
Yeah, and you know, it's like, that's like a cool opportunity, you know? And like, I guess a couple concepts I wanted to throw out there is like this idea of land trusts. A lot of places have land trusts that are like farmable land that, that's going unused, and they just keep it that way so that it doesn't get developed. And so like, it's interesting to think about like, you know, using existing land trusts as like co-ops for, like resiliency and building food autonomy, in ways that like you're not doing it on someone's land. And like, I think like to me, the big question when we're talking about land projects is a question of access and a question of privilege. And, if all we're doing is creating like little self-contained hamlets where we're like, you know, living out our whatever, Robin Hood fantasies or whatever, I don't think that is necessarily the answer either. In a concept that I just was introduced to through a podcast I haven't yet released with the Experimental Farming Network, which is like this open source farming project, which is basically like some doomsday prepper shit. It's fucking radical, very awesome. And one of the ideas they talked about was like a phasing out of like city life and like building a urban to rural pipeline and being very intentional about trying to make that transition. Because if you believe that, you know, global warming is real and that capitalism is doomed, then it makes sense that we should be thinking about ways to, you know, link up urban and rural and not like just, oh, we're going to leave all these people to die, because that shit's, I'm not interested in that either.
Well, I'm curious, any recent or standout moments of interactions with fans in terms of your art, whether podcasts or music, that really come to mind that you wanted to share?
I mean, I feel like I just shared a few. I mean, honestly, just like, you know, again, it's like when I had a new kid, I just was my daughter, Daisy, it was always so stressful in the first few months. And so coming out of that and just looking for all this feedback and just all the general feedback I got was just because of the way the algorithm is and because of the way things are, like we're largely like kind of boxed off from our supporters. And I think just like seeing that there's like so many intelligent, cool people that like fuck with my shit is like, it keeps me going, you know. It makes me feel like I'm not wasting my time. And so nothing in particular. Just realizing that like a lot of these people are cool.
Yeah, same for us too.
And not, I'm sorry. And what I mean by that is like not these like weird male groupies that used to like follow me into the bathroom drunk, like talking in my ear as I'm pissing, kind of shit. Like that, that was like the worst.
Well, it's just beyond people just consuming it. They're getting something from it.
Yeah. And like, you know, yeah, it's cool.
Yeah.
They're cool people.
It feels like there's a relationship that you're both growing as people are interacting with it.
Yeah. Like I had a listener from the podcast, like send me a bunch of pawpaw and chestnut trees last year. And that was like awesome. You know, I was like, fuck yeah. Like that's what I want. Send me some pawpaws.
Like, what would be a foreseeable project that you could do with all these, like, farms and land projects that, like, maybe right now you couldn't pull off, but, like, theoretically would be, like, the next step forward?
Well,
like, what would be a foreseeable goal in the next couple years, like, if all these projects kind of came together? Like, what would that look like? Would that look like people just kind of, like, freely kind of like giving produce or like sending it to places, or,
you know, I don't know. I mean, I think of like, you know, what my experience in Tarnac was, and it was like, yeah, they had all these farms and stuff, but they also had like the capacity to build buildings, and they had the capacity to, you know, have herbal medicine gardens, and but at the same time like have a concert in the middle of the countryside that feels like you're in Paris, you know? And so I think like creating new culture, creating like new ways of being in the world, you know, like I keep thinking like, what kind of concert would I want to do on a farm? You know, like that would be fun, but what would it be like? But I think like producing calorie crops in mass is one thing. You know, like one of the things we were talking about out here was, and it feels like weird to like talk about things that we've talked about privately. But like one idea that I really liked, and it was an old idea that people did in Maine, and it was like a co-op land project where people would in the city, people from Portland and around would like all work on Sundays on a farm and grow winter crops like squash, carrots, potatoes, etc. And then like, so people can work for whatever 4 hours a day every week or every 2 weeks or whatever. And then at the end, everybody splits up the crops. If you do those things on like, you know, commonly held lands or land trusts, there's Like, that's one thing. I think, like, producing calorie crops is a really good place to start. You know, like potatoes, corn, rice, etc. Being able to, you know, have these things on hand for disasters or for the disaster of the present. Like, I just love the idea of being on in a pickup truck full of potatoes with like black flags rolling into downtown and just giving out potatoes. And just planting the idea of like, food is one way to get free. You know, and just training people in those skills, like building up those capacity. Like, I've heard of comrades in other cities who are like planning on giving away 5,000 fruit trees in their local area just to build up food resiliency. You know, I think like things like chestnuts, like hybrid chestnuts, planting those now, like, because that is a protein, but it's mostly a starch. And so, like, thinking in terms of, like, where's the climate going? Grocery prices are only going up. So how can, like, we start building that, like, these native protein sources, like hazelnuts, and also thinking for the future and, like, building public free orchards. But again, it's just one thing, and I don't like to, like, it's just what I'm interested in, and, like, I don't like to present it as a silver bullet. Like, I don't think just by growing organic food we're gonna save the world, but I do think that, like, food is a huge component of resistance, and I think just, like, on a human level, like, getting your hands in the dirt and being around other people, like, I think of, like during like Black Lives Matter, like there'd be comrades who I had done like farming projects with, and like we'd find ourselves like having political disagreements about tactics and but it, like, you know, we had broken bread together, we had like got our hands dirty in the soil together, and so like we could have those conversations and disagree and still hug at the end of that shit. Whereas, like, if, like, we're just two strangers meeting on the street, maybe we'd be arguing. And so I like also the ability of food to bring people together. You know, everybody needs food. And it's just fun. It's a good way to spend your time. But, again, it's like I'm mostly pursuing this because it's what I'm interested in. And it's just one component of the broader revolutionary strategy. But I think like permaculture shit, like learning those concepts, like learning how to use perennial vegetables, adapting these crops, because we're going to be entering into a phase that's harder, where groceries are going to be more expensive, the climate is going to be unstable, and so perennial vegetables can be a really resilient source of nutrients. So, you know, and also like foraging, you know, just like knowing what you can eat. Like, just as you walk around, you're like, oh, I can eat that leaf on that tree. I can dig up those roots in my backyard. They're not going to taste very good, but I can. You know, it was whatever, you know. It's just fun.
Well, you brought up concerts. I'm curious, you know, last year we saw Black Flags Over Brooklyn, which was like an anti-fascist music festival, especially for like metal and extreme music. I know we've kind of kicked this idea around, but do you see something like an anarchist hip hop music festival, or even just like a specifically anarchist music festival taking place in the U.S. at any time? That seems like something that would be really cool to see.
Let's do it. Like, let's do it. Maybe people listening, you know, want to help with that. Like, let's do it. Sounds cool. I think that would be awesome. You know, especially, you know, just to get more people to know each other, you know, just to be sharing spaces, like more different, you know, I'm really into like affect theory and, you know, this idea of joyful militancy, like, you know, how can we make our movements more like open and bring people into them and get them excited.
I mean, it just does seem that, like, as, you know, music becomes, and, you know, podcasts, everything becomes something you consume essentially while you're, like, going to work or coming home from work or either at work or something, recovering from work. you know, like, I kind of do miss that aspect of underground music where it's like there is a community and you're also like building stuff, you know, you're setting up shows. And the idea of kind of like getting together with friends and going down to a venue that, you set up with, you know, a community of people and, you know, I don't know, screaming about the cops or something almost seems like kind of a faraway thing that used to happen back then. And it would be great to see that. I mean, I know it still happens, obviously, but to see it more.
Yeah, like a kind of like a gathering of the Juggalos or something, but with anarchists.
Yes. Gathering of the anarchos.
But like, you know, I mean, and that really, like, you know, the thing is, like, with the Spotify stuff and like the media consolidation, you know, like we it's up to us. It's up to the people listening. It's up to, like, you know, it's like we're the ones who get to, like, build that alternative music infrastructure, you know, and festivals are a great place to start. Like, we need that shit. That's how we can, you know, that's how we can, like, beat places like Spotify. Like, I think a Fusion Festival in Germany, it's on a former Soviet Air Force base. Like, that's one of the coolest things I've ever been to. Like, if people in the States could go to something like that, like, it would change. I mean, the shit like that changed my life, changed how I thought about music. It's awesome. We need more.
Well, with that in mind, we've been talking for a while. You said that you had some stuff coming out. I'm just curious if you could talk about, in closing, just any other projects you have going on. Anybody that you're listening to right now or any books you're reading, any sort of art or music or literature that's moving you and inspiring you right now.
You know, I'm really into the Inhabits, like just what Inhabit is putting out there right now. I think it's awesome. And actually, we will probably be doing some sort of open meeting here in Portland, Maine, like a discussion around that book and how it applies to Maine. And so if people who are interested in that can follow me on Twitter and we'll announce when we do that, because that's like, you know, like, that's why I try not to have too many ideas about these things. I like, you know, let's shape them together. Like, we have a couple ideas, but like, let's hear what other people want to do.
Insane in the main.
What else am I geeking out on right now? You know, I've been reading Recluse, the, John Clark's book on Recluse. I've been enjoying that. I've been reading, my friend Brandon McQuaid's book on surveillance. Those are the two things that I'm reading. And like, he really gets into like the collaboration between like fusion centers and corporations. And it's this, we're in a dystopian, period right now. Yeah. And other than that, you know, I got, like I said, I got like three albums probably coming out this year. I might come out with some, travel mugs. Podcast, trying to go, I'm going weekly with the podcast, and yeah, that's about it. And probably not going to have any more kids, so no more kids. It's awesome though, it's the best. But just
you could start a family band. Maybe that's like your 5-year plan, is to have a family band.
I mean, we already have a family band. I mean, my son loves, he's like a little he's fucking jamming all day. Chaos Pad. It's cute as hell. I love the shit. I'm a sucker, man.
Awesome. We'll go to soulone.org, right?
SOLEONE.org. Sign up to my newsletter. Don't even bother with my social media. If you want to follow my work, sign up to my newsletter because there's no algorithm there.
Awesome. Well, anything else you want to say or touch on?
Hey, thank you for having me on and for all the hard work you do. And, you know, people really need to support IGD and, you know, and, keep fighting and building and, asking those hard questions, and, we'll get these motherfuckers.
Thanks for tuning in to the It's Going Down podcast. If you want to ensure that IGD not only continues, but grows into the future, please log on to itsgoingdown.org/shop and sign up to become a monthly supporter. Without the support of our listeners and readers, we can't continue. So stand behind Revolutionary Autonomous Media by signing up to support us monthly or give us a one-time donation at itsgoingdown.org/shop. Until next time.